You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
It's Robbie Riss.
Laura Decker.
Hi, this is Willa.
Kat Robichaud.
Mandolin Carlson.
Connor Dwelly.
Next Big Thing Radio.
NextBigThingRadio.net.
This week's episode of Conversations is brought to you by Park to Park Travel Services. Visit parktoparktravel.com for all your concierge vacation needs. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy Conversations on NextBigThingRadio.net.
Conversations on NextBigThingRadio.net. Joining me tonight is special guest host. Mike had some family things he had to take care of tonight, Mr. Joe Burke. Joe, how you doing tonight, man?
Hey, what's up, Brett? How's it going, dude?
Good, good. Been a little while since we had you on here.
Yeah, it's been quite a while, but it's definitely good to be back. And I'm not sure if I can feel the shoes of Mr. Mike Dowler. Well, actually, I think I can because he only wears a size 4 in women's. I'm here all night, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here all night.
Oh, dude.
Mind you, he does look fantastic in stilettos. Just going to say that. So. But it is great to be back on Next Big Thing Radio. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. We're glad to have you. And thanks for filling in at the last minute here.
That's what she said.
We got a really exciting guest tonight, guys. I'm going to kind of just jump right into things here. He was most recently in Captain America Civil War. He played Karpov. So we'll say a big Next Big Thing Radio hello to Mr. Gene Farber. Gene, how you doing, man?
Hey, guys. How are you?
It's good to hear you, man. It's good to see you. Oh, man, it's awesome. This is really cool. I'm a big nerd, so when I was called on board to talk with you, man, it's kind of cool because I know your character very well from the comics and from the movie, and I'm like, oh, this guy, this is cool. All right, let's do this. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely. When I got the call to do it, I was very excited. It was a great opportunity. You know, I auditioned for that casting director about 5 different times to 5 different Marvel projects. And, you know, for one reason or another, I just wasn't right for it. And when this came along, it was just perfect. I came in and I just nailed it and heard, you know, fairly soon. After I left, that I got it, and I was blessed. And it actually grew. The part actually became much larger than what I initially signed on for. You know, it was a lot of fun to be part of it.
Yeah, any time that you can sign on as an actor or an actress, and you're part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think as an actor, you can probably just sit back and say, okay. I'm part of a bigger thing now. I'm part of something that's much larger than myself, and you're part of kind of a ongoing franchise that's constantly evolving. And your character is part of this now universe of the Marvel Cinematic. Just off the top of your head, man, how does it feel to be a part of something so pop culturally focused and iconic as like Captain America: Civil War or X-Men: First Class? How does that feel?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, to be able to do those kind of movies, you have to kind of work your way up to it. You know, it doesn't just happen overnight. You know, there's a lot of TV work, a lot of, theater that you have to do in training. And so it's just a natural progression. Even though it does feel like, you know, incredible to be part of something historic and, you know, Marvel Universe, something much larger than I, you know, anticipated, what's interesting about it is when I, you know, what really dawned on me is when I was in my makeup chair, let's say, you know, and someone would walk in and sit next to me and, you know, it was Chris Evans. He'd say, hey, what's up? You know, hey, I'm Chris. And I'd say, hey, how you doing? You know, and it was very nonchalant, very, you know, it was just us working, you know, when you're working as professionals and it's very, it's fun. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of, but it's also a level of professionalism that's, anticipated and sought for. So when you do those movies, you know, you're very aware of the magnitude and what you're a part of. And hence you act accordingly, respectfully, you do your job and you get out, you know. So yeah, but it was definitely, wow, incredible. All levels.
Yeah, I could not imagine that feeling. But hats off to you, man. And we hope to see you in the future. We hope to see you in many more movies, not just Marvel. But,
yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm you know, my character, unfortunately, if you saw the film, I don't want to spoiler alert. You know, kind of met his end in a very gruesome way. And that was interesting, you know, to shoot,
yeah.
'Cause that was an ordeal in itself. But it turned out all right. But yeah, exactly. Hopefully I can do some more Marvel in the future. We'll see.
Very cool, man. So you've done film work, obviously. You've also done some stage work as well. What do you kind of like better? Because I know you got your start on the stage.
Stage is something I started out in. You know, it was something that's very theater of my heart. You know, I got my training in theater. And, you know, it's what I did when I was in New York. You know, a lot of off-Broadway, a lot of regional. And it was, but when I came to Los Angeles, I really came here. There's not much theater here. There is. There's a different sort of a level, you know, and it in order to survive and to work and get paid, and eat, you can't really work and do theater in Los Angeles, unfortunately, and, you know, and make a living. And so I came here specifically for TV and film work. But I've also, before doing TV and film, I did a lot of video games, you know, some pretty big ones. You know, I did Call of Duty Black Ops, the highest, you know, selling game of all time, and one of the main characters in it, and Ghost Recon, Ace Combat, and, you know, things like that, Killzone. So, you know, those things are very theatrical in nature. You know, it's everything is performance capture, motion capture. You got dots all over you, and you're sort of in a theater atmosphere with cameras all over you, recording your every move. So that, you know, that was kind of fun to do. But since then, I haven't really done much theater. I've really been focused on TV and film.
Very cool. Now, talk a little bit about the motion capture for video games. I'll be honest with you, I really haven't played many console games here since I sold my Xbox about 5 years ago. But they've started using motion capture now to do like the cutscenes and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, video games are a little different from the PC games. The PC games, it's like Red Alert, where it's, you know, just talking heads, and it's, you know, there's like a little story going on, but it's a movie. Whereas in motion capture, they really, everything is animated. Everything is, you know, like an avatar, for example, the film. And everything is, so our characters are based off of our specific body types, and it's our movements, our faces. They'll have dots on them. They record that, and then they superimpose whatever extra they need, a mustache or, you know, whatever. You know, my eye gets cut out, so I have one eye on an eye patch. But yeah, it's essentially us, our likeness.
So when you're in the video game, like, and you're actually being captured, do you kind of, do they give you certain commands and certain gestures that you have to repeat over and over so they can capture those movements into the computer?
There's a little bit of that. There's always something you end with, the buttons where you know, after every scene that you do, you know, the scenes are basically the scripted scenes, like a movie would be, you know, and it's all action, it's all military based, it's all, you know, trying to get the enemy or trying to accomplish some kind of mission or get some kind of a, you know, ammunition or whatever. But after you do that, every scene ends with a button. And that button is basically you're standing there, every actor has to do certain physical movements that they record, that they have in their bank. But overall, what they use is, what they've recorded, the scenes, and they animate that, and they, you know, feed that into the story.
Can you give us a little bit of Mr. Weaver?
Mr. Weaver, okay, ready when you are. You know, enemy left window. You know, Frag, come in. You know, that's
so kind of awesome. Stuff. Little, I'm a huge Call of Duty fan, right, dude. I know exactly your role, and I remember the eye patch and the kind of the handlebar mustache that they gave you from the video game, and it's pretty cool, man. That's pretty awesome that they did that.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I was very, very, very proud of that.
Yeah, but that's another franchise too. Just like Marvel Cinematic, you've also got this Call of Duty, which is a beast in the video game market and the console industry. And just like the films that you've been in, you've kind of found your way and dabbled into so many other mainstream video games, cinematic theater. Is there something out there that fans may not know that you do, like music or any other arts or crafts or painting or anything that you do on the side?
Well, no, I'm an avid rock climber. I rock climb, and I swim a lot. And I have a family. You know, I have a wife, I have a daughter, so that takes up most of my time. I have a dog, a beautiful Australian cattle dog that needs exercise every day, so I take to the park. You know, I'm an avid hiker. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty normal in every regard except what I do. And I act for a living. And and I'm very fortunate to do that. You know, honestly, I got to mention this, the fact that, you know, that I'm sort of blessed because I have a niche. And that niche is, you know, I come from a former Soviet Union, right? So I speak Russian. And, you know, Russia is, still is a very formidable, you know, adversary and it's the bad guy, you know, essentially. So that was my niche. That's kind of how I, you know, a lot of the things that I do is, you know, Eastern European bad guy. And the people say, well, aren't you afraid of being typecast? And I just want to say this to young actors or whoever's listening, that look, you know, I'd rather be cast than typecast. Everybody's typecast. You know, you can't get around it. Just do what you can, take what you can, and don't, you know, be humble in what you do. And, you know, every Russian guy is different. Every part that I play is different. You know, they don't maybe have the same heritage, but one is Bosnian, one is Czech, one is, you know, Russian, and they all come from different places. And that's what I want to say. You know, every role is different. And I play, you know, that's 60% of my bread and butter is playing Eastern Europeans. The other 40 is playing Americans. I could, you know, pull that off as well. But yeah, that's important to mention.
That's pretty awesome that you said that to especially young aspiring actors out there or actresses that's listening, that, you know, just basically own up to your role and your heritage and be who you are. And at the end of the day, that'll pay off more than somebody that you aren't. And so that's truly awesome.
Exactly. Exactly. Just be, you know, you find out who you are, really go from within, because you can't find it externally. You know, you really, every role you approach, you have to come in from, how would I do this? You personally, you know, what if the magic, if, and whatever you can't, you know, think, you know, whatever you can associate with, think up, use your imagination, you know, riff. You know, that's what acting is. You got to be an artist before you're a businessman. You know, don't worry about Instagram. Worry about your, you know, what you're going to do in the room.
I'm so glad you said that, because there's so many people that are so focused on their social media image more so than, you know, what their actual body of work is. And,
well, listen, don't get me wrong. I mean, social media is very, very, very important nowadays. It really is. It is how you connect with fans. You know, that's important to have that connection. But I will say that, you know, because of it, there's also the downside is that people seek to be celebrities and not artists, right? So you have to really, when you say you want to be an actor or an actress, do you want to be a celebrity or do you want to be an actor? Because there's a difference. Yes, sometimes being an actor, you become a celebrity. That's the byproduct. But not all actors are celebrities. You know, most actors, 90% of actors are, you know, like myself. They're working actors. We're always hustling for the next gig. Nothing is guaranteed. Some of us have side jobs, you know, that we do to survive, believe it or not. You know, it's a hustle. You know, it really, until you get to that A level where everything's offered to you, you know, when you're doing it, it's great. But when you're not, you know, you're looking for the next opportunity. So that's what I'll say.
And you're definitely not the first one that's come on to that said that. We've had quite a number of young actors on here over the years. We also had we've had Robbie Rist on a few times. I don't know if you know who that is.
I don't actually.
He was the voice of Michelangelo in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
The original ones. I love those.
Oh, and he's an awesome guy. And he does a lot of voiceover work. He does a lot of he's actually got a band that he tours with overseas a lot. And then he does like little shows and gigs around LA that are just awesome, and they're great to go check out. But that's how he makes, you know, when he's in between projects, he plays gigs for money.
Right. Exactly. You know, I mean, you know, people think that, you know, once you do one or two, you're set. And that's mm-hmm. not how it works. That's the glamour of Hollywood. You know, when you see, you know, when you see the behind the scenes, you realize that, you know, 90% of actors are working actors. You know, it's, mm-hmm. and individuals, yes, they pay. But they don't pay like they used to, and you know it's
right.
It's a different game. It's a different game entirely. But having said that, Instagram, you know, people, you know, become celebrities overnight. They have a million followers. They get sponsored. They have offers. They confuse that with being an actor, you know, or being an artist. You're not necessarily an artist. You're but there are artists on social media. Don't get me wrong. You know, and it's important to really take the art seriously. The art mm-hmm. is where it lies. You approach every role fresh and new, and you don't know what's going to happen, and you know, and it's a blank canvas, and you have an opportunity to impress and to perform and to, you know, make somebody connect with you and make them feel, you know, and then once you change the chemistry in the room, when you're in the audition room, once you feel like something happened and you leave, that's when you know that you made an impact. But then you get the role, hopefully, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was looking over some of your, you've been, like you said, very blessed to have a lot of different roles and a lot of different venues. I was looking over, like, you've been on 24, and you've been on Mistresses and Perception and Persons of Interest and CSI Las Vegas. But you got your start in 2004 on Law and Order. Now, looking back at the television roles versus your cinematic roles, what are, for you, like, in terms of like workload, what is the difference between the two, or is it kind of the same?
Well, it's a lot more similar now than it used to be. But you know, with just the production value is just, you know, grander, you know, it's just more, with TV, it moves quicker.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're shooting one episode every 1 or 2 weeks, and there's not much time. They have to really kind of move it. So you don't get many takes. You get 1 or 2 takes, you know, maybe. And then, whereas with film, you know, it still has a tempo. There's still a clock, but there's a little more flexibility to get it right. You know, so you can do 5, 6 takes, and they really, you know, everything has to come into place. So that's the main difference.
Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Definitely. So with let's go back a little bit. You said you grew up in Belarus, and then you moved here at a really young age. Actually, you were right around 11 years old. What was it? What was it like at 11 to move to Queens, New York, from Belarus?
Oh man, you're taking me way back. Yeah, Jackson Heights. Jackson Heights, Queens. You should resist this Jackson Heights. And it was interesting. It was a culture shock. You know, we didn't just come to the States immediately. We had to kind of do a little beeline. We went to Austria first for a few months, then to Italy, and then we came to the States. That was sort of the route that the Russian immigrant would take to get to the States. You couldn't fly through the Iron Curtain, you know, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, and then my first flight was Pan Am from Rome to JFK. That was my very first flight.
Wow.
I remember in 1990 I arrived. It was a big culture shock. It was great. I didn't speak any English, and I had to learn the language, but luckily I came at an age where it was right when puberty hit, you know, I was 11. So, mm-hmm. And that's what I found out, is that theoretically you can lose your accent if you've come before puberty, because your voice hasn't had a chance to solidify it. So theoretically, with you know, a dialect coaching and whatever, you can reduce and eliminate your accent entirely. And that's why I came at that age, which is why, you know, when you hear me speak, I sound very normal American. And but I can definitely put on a Russian accent when if I have to. You know, so.
Wow.
But it was interesting, and I was bullied a little bit because of, you know, my immigrant, commie status, so to speak. Didn't know me that well, but it was great. It was a really good experience, and then I got into LaGuardia High School for Performing Arts, and that's where I went. I went for 4 years to LaGuardia, and every day I would take the train, the 7 train, from Queens to Manhattan, and it was amazing. It was an eye opener. You know, I don't know if you know that school. It's the famous Fame School from the movie Fame. And then I got into Boston University after that on a scholarship for acting. Boston University College of Fine Arts. Back then it was called School of Fine Arts, and that was fantastic. You know, I mean, that was it. I was hooked. You know, and then studied in London for a first semester, and I got out and went back to Queens, lived in Queens for back in my neighborhood for actually the whole time, and until I came to Los Angeles 9 years ago, did a lot of, like I said, a lot of theater, and just immersed myself in the New York theater scene, and, you know, did Law and Order, did whatever there was, and then I was flown out to Los Angeles a few times on screen tests for pilots. And then, you know, my agency at that time was Bicoastal, and, you know, and they said, hey, you know, just stay. And eventually I did. I stuck around, and then and I came. I actually drove cross country. I packed my car up, drove cross country, and came in 2008.
Oh, man.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's insane. Put everything in the car and just headed off to Hollywood.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and I came, and it was a very unfortunate time when I came, because I came in 2008. I don't know if you remember, but I came and the writer's strike happened.
So oh, that is right. I remember that.
For 3-4 months, you know, there was nothing. It was, you know, dry as a bone. I was trying to make it. So I slept on floors and, you know, and waited tables and did whatever I could. And then I was lucky to get Call of Duty. And then I got a show called Virtuality. It was a pilot, two-hour pilot that Peter Berg directed. And it was fantastic. But unfortunately, our air date coincided with Michael Jackson's death. Oh, nobody was watching our show, and then it kind of got buried after that. But it was after that, it was, you know, my career kind of took off gradually, a lot of guest stars and occurring and all that stuff. But yeah, and here we are.
You're still very essentially pretty young, though. I mean, you were born in 1978, so you're almost my age. I was born in 79. And I was just thinking, you know, you were talking about, you know, being part of the Boston School of Arts and all that, and how you was on, you know, done some stage productions in and around Boston and Baltimore area. I just got to throw this out there just because I know a theater company. I used to work for a theater company, and Brett knows exactly where I'm going with this. Did you ever audition or try to audition or think about auditioning for the Blue Man Group in Boston?
Man, that's interesting you say that. Well, have I thought about it? I mean, of course I did. And actually, a classmate of ours auditioned and got in. Oh, man, what's his name? Rube.
Eric Rube. I know Eric Rube.
Eric Rube. Thank you very much.
Oh, man, yeah. Eric Rube is down here in Orlando now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he transferred. Yeah, I just met him, I just saw him, 2 days ago. Yeah, but Universal Studios is crazy.
And he's doing Blue Man, right?
Yeah, he's still doing Blue Man. God bless his heart. He's been doing it almost 20 years now. So
that's it. He started out. I remember him because we used to be roommates in Boston for a little brief while. He got it because at that time, I remember him getting so excited. And that's why it's crazy you mentioned that. And I'm not Eric Rube when it comes to my drumming skills or finding skills. So I kind of thought about it for a second. I didn't take it too seriously, but it's amazing you bring it up. Wow.
That is crazy. That's a weird connection. And, you know, I get to see him in a week and a half because the missus and I are going to go see a show again. And if he's working the show, I'll be sure to mention your name. Hey, do you know Gene? You know Gene.
Gene Farber, yeah, from Boston University. You should totally say that. Oh, my God, he's in a book of life.
He'll be like, wow. All right, seriously, what kind of Kool-Aid did you just drink?
That is the podcast.
I used to work for Blue Man Group out of New York, and so I have a lot of thick history, and I know that, you know, the Charles Playhouse is in Boston. So I was just curious if there was any sort of connection there, and lo and behold, there was.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow.
Good old 6 degrees of separation there, man.
That's it, baby.
I know. Oh, my gosh.
That's fantastic.
Now, actually, that's how Joe and I met, was through the Blue Man Group fan community. Have you ever actually seen a show?
I've never seen the show, believe it or not. I'd love to get tickets. You can get me tickets, guys. Here in Los Angeles area, for me, my family, and my daughter, oh, my God, I'll be forever grateful.
I might be able to swing that if you're in Las Vegas. I'm going to be in Las Vegas. I'm going to be in Vegas, let's see, October the 8th through the 16th. I'll be out there at the new Luxor show. If you really are sincere, I might be able to put in a word for you for one of those nights, and maybe we can all see a show together.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be in New York at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go to a friend's wedding, but yeah. But
you know what, though?
But I have to see it.
The deal's on the table, though. If you want to go, I can put your name in. I can get your contact information through Brett. We can make that happen for you, dude.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, we'll make it happen for you.
The connections get made on this show,
oh,
man.
I'm telling you, dude. It's like the NBC, you know, the more you know. But anyway.
That's right.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Well, cool. So you kind of touched a little bit on your college and high school experience there. You actually had you graduated with from high school with the first level prize for excellence in the arts, and that's how you went. That was the scholarship you were talking about, right?
Wow, you did your research. That's pretty good. Yeah. Well, no, when I was in high school, there's this competition the senior year for all the seniors in the United States and Puerto Rico and Hawaii. I think seniors from foreign ones, that it's called the National Foundation for the Advancement in the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they hold this Arts Week in Miami, where it's actually not a week, it's more like 2 weeks. And it's in every category of the art, photography, dance, acting, poetry. So I got in. I was one of the finalists. I applied, and I was one of them for my school from LaGuardia that year that went. And then you compete there. You compete for first through fifth prize, level. And then I ended up winning top prize of that too. And that really helped a lot, financially, and helped me go to Boston University. It was that prize, but also BU. The school itself gave me a pretty nice scholarship, pretty nice ride. So it was very affordable for me to go there because of that. And then when I senior year of Boston University, Boston University has this another award called the Khan Award, also given to artists. It's called Career Entry Level Career Entry Award. Kind of gives you a prize to enter into your career after graduation, and I was able to win that as well. I wasn't the only one, but I was one of the finalists, and I ended up winning top prize. So that helped me kind of get off my feet and start acting in New York and pursuing my dreams. So yeah,
absolutely. And we just want to kind of pause for a second for station identification. For you guys that are listening, you are listening to Next Big Thing Radio, nextbigthingradio.net. And we are having a show here called Conversations, and we're talking to Mr. Gene Farber, who has an amazing acting career. He's been in video games and in feature films such as X-Men First Class and Captain America Civil War. And he's got a lot of exciting new projects coming out. And speaking of new projects, can you talk a little bit about some of the ones that you got coming out? I was looking on... IMDb, you got One Under the Sun co-starring. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's
that's
that
right,
one?
Yeah, One Under the Sun. Oh, that's a really fun project. One Under the Sun is a film that I did about a mission to Mars. It's a psychological thriller, but it's starring Pooja Bhatra, who is a fantastic actress. It's actually Miss India in 1992, something like that. and a fantastic Bollywood actress and Hollywood actress, as well as some other incredible artists and actors. And it takes place in the future. I can't really divulge too much because mm-hmm. I don't want to give away and then spoil anything. But it's about what will be a day without war. It's a mission to Mars that kind of goes awry, and there's one survivor, but she's got a huge message to deliver, and that survivor is my wife. I play Pooja's husband and our daughter, played by Ava Cantrell. She's actually also an incredible actress. She's a star of Lights Out. That's a horror film that came out. You can follow her. Ava plays my daughter in the film, and it's a really emotional story. She's dying. She's of cancer, terminally ill. Our wife is an astronaut, goes to space, and it should be coming out. It came out in festival. It should be coming out soon.
Awesome.
There's another film that I did with, actually called The Body Tree. That was something that I'm also very proud of. It's coming out soon as well. I play a Russian, it's a horror film, set in Siberia, and I play a Russian shaman, an Altai shaman. That was something that...
A Russian shaman?
Actually, the word shaman is a Russian word. Believe
really?
It's, it's an Altai word. Altai shamans are the ones that live in Siberia. They're, the deer people, so to speak. It was really incredible to delve into that history, and that culture is coming back strong. It's pre-Christian, very pagan, culture, and that's where shaman comes from.
Isn't that the originators of the Tugan throat singing? Is it the throat
that's
singers?
Right. That's exactly right.
Look at that! I made a connection.
Yeah,
there we go.
That's right. And that's who I played, and it was really, really fascinating. It was a horror film, but it was also like a psychological thriller. That's coming out soon, so keep your eyes for that. The Body Tree.
The Body Tree. Okay.
That sounds interesting. And
I have a few other films in development as well that I'm working on.
We're definitely excited for those ones. I know we had actually had Ava Cantrell on a couple of weeks ago. I talked to her about Lights Out briefly and One Under the Sun as well. And she's a total sweetheart. She is such a very humble young lady.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, I love Ava. Ava's fantastic. Yeah, she really is. I mean, she's a kindred spirit. She's so talented at such an age. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very honored to have worked with her. So. Because you keep your eye out for Ava. She's going to be a huge star in the future. You watch.
Oh, absolutely, man. I'm with you on that. I know a lot of people don't like to go watch themselves on film or in TV shows or anything. Have you found yourself just stumbling upon something that you were in and actually changed the channel because you were in it, or do you actually enjoy going back and watching your performance?
I'm the kind of actor that learns by watching myself. I know that sounds maybe counterintuitive. It's not good to watch yourself when you're doing it,
mm-hmm.
but when you're done doing it, I don't see a problem with it. Some actors don't like to do it because their work is done. They're on to the next. And that's the healthy way to kind of approach it. Don't rest on your laurels. What's the point of watching it? The whole point is the experience of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The watching it is for the spectator, But I like to watch it to learn from it. That's how I started out watching myself. And because I come from the theater tradition. Acting mm-hmm. is a little bigger, a little more theatrical, so to speak.
Right.
It's a little more intimate, a little smaller. Not less, but just a little more, more focused in TV and film.
Mm-hmm.
And as an actor, you have to really kind of gauge that difference. You have to know what your audience is, what they see. If it's a close-up, if it's an extreme close-up, if it's a three-quarter shot, you have to know that. And so that's why I like to I like to watch myself. I have no problem with that. I learn a lot. Sometimes I watch myself from 15, 20 years ago, and that I cringe because I see that I'm just playing at it, so to speak. Some of the earlier maybe Law and Order episodes I'm not mm-hmm. Too fond of, but it was a very, very good learning experience. To kind of go through that and say, oh, wow, yowza, tone it down a bit, speak volumes with not saying much. But yes, in that regard, I think it's beneficial. But then again, I don't know. I don't know if I'd recommend it for all actors.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. So, you know, we've talked about video games, we've talked about television, we've talked about movies. And if anyone, basically the whole purpose of Next Big Thing is to kind of just have a generalized conversation with the people that are in the industry. If there's anybody out there that's listening, an actor or an actress or somebody aspiring to be in the industry, what kind of advice can you give them to kind of coach them along? What is the one thing that you have learned in your many years of acting and experience that you could maybe, like a tidbit, you could pass along to someone else?
Just keep a level head, you know, keep a level head about it. It's an art and you're passionate about it, you know, and it's good. It's good to have that. It's good to be an artist. But, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs. A lot of ups and downs, no matter, and you have to really be ready for it. You got to have a thick skin. You know, you can't take things personally, and you have to let things go, and you have to let things go. You know, it's done.
Right.
You know, when you go on an audition, you leave the room, forget about it. Stop talking about it to your friends, how amazing it is, how not amazing. You don't know. You know, that's hard. It's hard to do because you invest in the auditions. You invest in the roles. But, you know, have a life outside of the art, you know, have that feed the art, you know, have somewhere else you have to go. That's going to make the acting better. That's going to make it urgent, you know, and so that's what I'll say. Have strong hobbies, have, you know, family that the people you like spending time with outside of acting. You know, nothing more boring for me than hanging out with all all actors.
Right.
You know, everybody is dropping names. Everybody's talking about how they're working with somebody and they're working on. It's boring. You know what I mean? Come on. And that's what I'll say. You know, get out of, you know, step off the stage sometimes.
There you have it, folks. Step off the stage. All right. So we've got some kind of little funner questions I'd like to ask, since we did kind of delved into some more serious stuff here. What's the biggest flub you've ever made on camera?
Biggest flub? Interesting. Oh, man. I don't think I have flub. Flubs are good things, man. Flubs, I make flubs all the time. That's magic. What do you mean? Let me explain what I mean. There's no such thing as flubs. I mean, bloopers are one thing, but a flub is an accident that happens, and that's a good, like, okay, I was working on the first Law and Order that I did, where I played a Georgian, you know, gangster. Right. I was being arrested by the late Jerry Orbach and Jesse L. Martin in a bar. And, you know, there's all my goons around me and there's all the shot glasses. And, you know, Jesse throws me up against the wall. And, you know, one of the goons happens to knock over two shot glasses and they break. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being the smart actor that Jerry Orbach and, you know, Jesse L. Martin are, they went right along with it. And it was perfect in the actual episode. That would be considered a flub, but it's not. It's a happy little accident,
right?
And that's, you know, it's unexpected. That's in a way, it's unexpected for the actor, so much better for the audience.
I can believe that. I can believe that.
That's a really good answer.
All right.
Yeah, I like that. So we've also asked a couple past guests, what's the oddest thing you've ever taken from set?
From set? Wow. Oh man, you're gonna bust into this one. Well, it's not odd. It's just
we can go anywhere, Gene.
You did. It's not odd. It's just that I always take it, and if anybody listening to production now, they know. I always take socks. Like, come on, like really? If I'm gonna wear, they can always give you socks, and you wear socks. I'm not gonna put socks back. I'm gonna take them. It's not odd. It's just that's part of the job, right?
Hey, it's smart, man. You don't have to buy socks.
I take the socks. And that's not stealing. I wore one of them in, you know, my socks.
Yeah.
It has my DNA in it. I mean, after all, they are
right.
My socks. It's not like you're going to wash them and give them to Chris Evans or anything. It's my socks.
Well, ironically, they don't give you new socks. Ironically, somebody else probably wore them before you did, and they just washed them.
Oh,
so I keep them.
Glorious. Man. Glorious.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, I was... I was hoping that, you know, you would say, well, I stole a web shooter or picked up a Captain America shield and just kind of, you know, snuck it through the back door. But that's okay. We'll take socks any day.
right, exactly. Socks are fine, yeah. I'm the socks.
Or at least the red beret from Karpov. I mean, that would
have been out.
Yeah, that's right. I really wanted that beret.
It's all right. It's
but,
okay.
You know, I did get some nice swag. I got some nice t-shirts that the Offset only crew got. Awesome. I did get a couple of what do you call it, dog tags.
Oh,
Captain America, like cool. in the production details. It's very cool. Yeah.
That's rad. That's awesome.
So we have one of the stories Mike loves to tell, and he didn't tell me this for the first 3 years two or three years I knew him. His wife is of short stature. She played an Ewok in Return of the Jedi, and she still has the underwear that she wore under the Ewok suit.
Oh my God!
So you're not the only one that gets underwear from the set.
Wow, I can really roll in so many directions with that information. Oh, Brad, you should not have told me that because, oh, all right. So I got to send a message to Mike Daller and ask for the Ewok underwear. That is so bizarre, Brad. Thank you. That's good.
It definitely is. I was like, well, that's kind of cool, but
weird.
Right. Weird at the same time. Underwear.
Yeah. From the 70s. I guess they're in style now again, I guess. I don't know.
I know, right? Yeah. I'm surprised they still want these. It's a great.
Ewok undies hashtag.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, you shouldn't have told me that, Brett.
Oh my God!
Apologize if you're listening, Mike.
I can't apologize. I'm from Kentucky. I just have to say, God bless your little heart.
We're coming up on the end here, Gene. We do definitely appreciate you spending about 45 minutes here with us tonight. Do you have any charities you want to promote, any upcoming projects you want to promote? We kind of give the guests the last word, so to speak.
Sure. I mean, the Animal Project, something I'm passionate about. It's a animal rescue organization. You can always check it out online, the Animal Project. I just want to thank you for your time, the opportunity to kind of tell my story, and hopefully help some budding artists get inspired, you know, along the way.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for taking time and just hanging with us. We certainly do appreciate it, and we look forward to your next role on the silver screen.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks. You too, Gene. Thanks. Wow, that was awesome, man. Folks, that was Gene Farber. I want to thank him for joining us, and do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Park to Park Travel Services, guys. I want to thank Park to Park Travel. ParkToParkTravel.com is our sponsor, guys. Go ahead and check them out for all your vacation planning needs. Whether you're doing a Orlando theme park trip, you're planning a trip out to the national parks to celebrate their 100th year anniversary, or you just want to go check out Disneyland for the tail end of the 60th anniversary celebration, give them a ring, drop them a line. Again, it's ParkToParkTravel.com. You can also email them ParkToParkTravel@gmail.com. That's it for us, guys. Joe, again, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you all in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Brad. See you next time, dude.
From everyone here at PopXcast, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and don't forget to subscribe for more great content. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on, all at PopXcast. Thank you.